Welcome to Shollycast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. Shollycast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. Together, we make up Team CyberHex. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening 1 and 2, an adult visual novel game where you play as a Shota protagonist and get into all sorts of wholesome, naughty fun with friends and family. I primarily work on the writing and planning for our games, and Dr. X works on the programming, artwork, and additional writing. If you'd like to play Insexual Awakening 1 or 2, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. You can also check out our continued development progress of Insexual Awakening 2 at our Subscribestar, which is subscribestar.adult/cyberhex. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Shollycast. I'm Hydro, back again with Dr. X. And in today's episode, we are joined by Born to Die. Welcome, Born to Die.
Hello, how's it going, guys?
Very good.
Very good.
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited that you're on. So the first thing we always like to ask our guests generally is, how did you get into Lolly and Shota? Or in your case, you seem to draw more Lolly with a mixture of also just like adult women, teenage women. How did you get into that?
I mean, I guess it all started with just drawing in general. I've been drawing since forever, since I can remember. I actually started drawing graffiti at the start. Like pre-adolescence, I was really much more into graffiti. And I was really, really getting deep into learning letters and buying magazines and learning from them. I actually went on a little excursion with a couple of friends once to tag a couple of sites, but didn't quite like it. It was a little too dangerous. So I just focused on my notebook and started doodling there. And then puberty hit me and I started to look at more and more anime ladies. One of the first animes that I really got into was Ranma One Half, if you guys have heard of it.
I have heard of it.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones that I was starting to see more cute anime ladies. And of course, there was Sailor Moon and there was a whole bunch of other animes that I checked out. Here in Mexico, when kids in the United States got back, they would watch afternoon Disney shows, right? Here in Mexico, we got a whole bunch of anime and a whole bunch of very strange anime that a lot of people haven't really seen, but they were dubbed very quickly. And I saw a whole bunch of anime from there. And of course, we got Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, got into that as well. And after puberty hit me, I just kept trying to draw and draw more sexy anime ladies. And it was very difficult at the start. I started tracing and just trying to figure out how the anatomy went. But I just kept on drawing and drawing since that was one of my favorite hobbies, alongside video games, of course. And then eventually, once I started getting into Loli was after I saw, and I'm not even really sure how I saw it, but after I saw a bit of Kodomo no Jikan, which I'm sure you guys have heard of it.
Have you heard of it, Dr. X?
Is that a doujin series?
No, I don't think it's a doujin. I think it's an actual anime. It has nothing, not really hentai in any way, shape or form. It's more cute and sexy. Kodomo no Jikan, really? You're gonna have to research it. Also, I think the English translation is a child's time. Kodomo, meaning kid, jikan is time. So kodomo no jikan. That was one of the first loli specific animes that I saw. And at the time, I was drawing regular anime ladies. In fact, I was drawing a little too much furry characters. One of my first characters that I drew were kind of furry. I was a child in the 90s. There was a whole lot of furry going on at the time.
That is true. There actually were like a lot of different furry characters in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
From Disney shows and from animated things, anime.
That's how the furries were born.
Yeah, they mostly came from the 90s. So I was able to dodge that bullet and I started focusing on just regular anime. But I did draw a couple of characters. My first characters that I drew, Rem and Ari, they did start out as furry characters, but that got switched over to regular humans after a while. And at the time I was drawing regular anime girls, but then I saw Kodomo no Jikan, and that just kind of showed me how much cuter I can make anime characters. So I just kept on trying to make them look more and more like the lolis. And I didn't even know loli was even a thing, but I just kept on trying to mimic that style. And then from there, I started going to other mangas that also featured loli. And I started looking at a whole lot of different artists. And there were a lot of really great artists drawing lots of different styles that I have never really seen before. And they kept making the characters smaller and cuter. So I just kept on drawing what I liked. I just wanted to keep drawing cute, small characters. And then that's how I turned my character into more of a loli type character. And that's pretty much how I started doing that. But I don't consider myself a loli artist per se. I'm definitely more of a hentai artist. Like you mentioned, I do draw females of all different sizes. And I do enjoy drawing the MILFs, the teens, anything in between. I do like the female form, but I also like drawing dudes, not in that way. But I do like drawing cool guys doing cool shit. I do like the manimes back in the day. So I did also drew a little bit of Goku and Vegeta back in the day, but I was more into Bulma for obvious reasons. But I do draw pretty much whatever I feel like at the time. I don't like to limit myself in a box. There are certain things that I don't want to draw, straight up gore or rape and that sort of stuff. I'm not a big fan of that. But if I just feel like drawing it, then I'll just do it. And when it comes to Shota, I do draw Shota, but I don't focus on the Shota. I focus more on the MILFs. That's what really, what I'm much more interested in. I just like the contrast. The more contrast, the better. If it's a loli and a Shota together, it's not all that exciting for me. But a Shota and a MILF, a lot more interesting. And of course, with lolis, I do all sorts of other stuff with them. And but I do draw lots of different styles of characters. So that's basically how I got started.
When you watched Kodomo no Jikan, did you find the characters attractive at the time?
Well, yeah, I found them cute. And the artist, I forget the artist's name, but the artist was telling a story about you guys were making a game called Sexual Awakening, right? Or In Sexual Awakening.
Yes.
It's basically the full story of Kodomo no Jikan is basically a little girl who has fallen in love with her school teacher. She's kind of sexual, but not completely. And she's just kind of learning about herself. It never really delves deep into that sort of hentai sort of thing. It does a very good job of keeping it cute and sexy without going sexual with the whole story. And there's a lot of character moments, lots of different other characters that interact with her as well. And I really liked the story, and I really liked the contrast between the female lolis and the more adult male characters. And yeah, that was generally what I enjoyed most. She was attractive and she's cute, but I wasn't really into it because of the sexual story. I was more into it because of the contrast and how, what a cute relationship can occur through these two different types of characters.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and it makes sense that when you do Shota art, you like pairing them with MILFs because of that contrast. So you're into the kind of the body size difference and the age difference as well.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go full on ugly bastard kind of contrast, but definitely gonna. I definitely like that contrast. Like I have read some doujins with some very lovey dovey characters, and they're all very equal to each other. They're both attractive, both the same age and stuff like that. It's just not as interesting to me. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that you have drawn like a loli with like an adult man or teenage man, like in other words, for that contrast?
Yeah, yeah. That contrast is what I really enjoy about the whole relationship.
Nice. I mean, there was a lot of fascinating stuff where you were talking about. You started off like graffiti and doing stuff like that. And then you just started sketching and drawing. I mean, when you were learning the female anatomy, were you just basically, you said you were doing a little bit of tracing to kind of learn the curves and the shapes and stuff. Did you is that kind of just how you learned the anatomy, just through that kind of process of just continuously drawing and drawing? Or did you actually get to a point where you're just like, I need to study some actual anatomy?
I did a lot of tracing. At first, I was buying sticker books of Ranma One Half, and I would trace on top of these sticker books with the characters on them. And basically, I would just try to draw them butt naked. And I didn't really understand the anatomy whatsoever, and I didn't really care, because I wasn't really drawing anime to learn to draw. I was just trying to see them naked, and that's about it. But then as time went on, I wanted to draw them in different poses, not just the poses that were being on my sticker book. So I would actually start to draw little by little, just trying to see if I can get them in different positions. And it was very, very difficult. And I'm not really quite sure when I started to quote unquote take it seriously, but I started learning to draw this sort of stuff before there was an internet, or before there was YouTube, or there were tons and tons of different tutorials. I kind of had to bang my head against the wall until something came out correctly. And that's kind of what I've been doing now. I do watch a couple of tutorials, and I try to learn from other artists that are way better than me. And there's a lot to learn out there. But basically where I'm at this point right now, I pretty much got here just by just banging my head against the wall.
You did it the hard way.
Yeah.
The hard and horny way, I should say, because your original motivation, or one of the big motivations, was you just wanted to see them naked. So
yeah, pretty much.
I mean, horny brain, don't underestimate the power of it, because that'll be a big motivator. That was for me with the first In Sexual Awakening. That's how I basically came up with the game, was I was just like, damn it, there's no games out there that are straight shota that do all the stuff that I want. Well, I'll just come up with my own.
Well, that's the best way to make things. You just see that there's something out there that doesn't quite exist in your own brain, and you just try to make it happen. So that's a really great way of creating.
Exactly.
What current anime or current mangas are you into? Have you been watching like any current like modern anime, or into anything in particular that's been like of interest to you, or has like inspired you to draw? Or
funny thing is, I don't watch a whole lot of anime, to be perfectly honest. I do watch the occasional anime here and there, something that if it grabs my attention, sure, I'll check it out. But generally speaking, I don't watch too much anime. I play a lot more video games than I watch anime.
What was an example of like a video game you've recently played where like you might have seen like a character just like, oh, I gotta draw him, because that frequently happens.
Oof. Not that I can think of right now. Generally speaking, the anime characters from video games that I do draw are from fighting games, like Mai Shiranui or Chun-Li, that sort of stuff. Like I do play all sorts of different games. I don't stick to one genre. So I don't really see a whole lot of anime or characters that I want to draw as anime characters in most of my games, because I play a lot of Battlefield, for example, or Titanfall. So I don't generally get inspired to draw anime from these type of games. But if I am really into a fighting game and there is a cute character there that I want to draw, yeah, I've drawn them. I drawn Angel from King of Fighters. I don't know if you know her.
I think I might know her. I haven't played King of Fighters enough.
Are there any loli characters from games that you've drawn?
Loli characters from video games. I've been asked or commissioned to draw various loli characters from games. The girl from Resident Evil 2, I believe. I forget her name.
Oh, Sherry Birkin.
Sherry Birkin, yes. I've done her multiple times. I've drawn other characters. I draw the little girl from Evil Within, the daughter. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think I know that one. Yes. I haven't played The Evil Within, actually, but I know that a lot of people really like that game.
Well, the first one and the second one, they both have their own strange story. Like, they're not even connected, but anime characters that I've drawn, yeah, it's generally speaking, whatever people commission me to draw, I tend to, sometimes I do get loli characters from different games. But oh, and Sakuna from Rice and Ruin. I don't know if you heard it.
No, I haven't heard of it.
No, no, no. It's a platforming game. Yeah, it's just very cute. She's a goddess. She's 1,000 years old, so it's okay.
Of course.
Yep, yep, it is.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a platforming game. It's got some hack and slash, and you grow rice, so it sounds very exciting. And but yeah, I've drawn other loli characters from video games, but I don't really focus on that. Sometimes people do tend to recommend me different media, video games, anime, etc., etc., where it has a loli character in it, but I personally am not interested in just watching something because it has a loli in it. I have to be into the premise, the story, and the concept.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because we did get asked that in the community episode. Like, someone asked if we ever watched something or played something just because it had a loli or a Shoto character in it, and we were like, no.
yep.
I mean, if the loli is interesting, maybe. I don't know. It really depends on the story, because stories, they tend to require more investment, right? You have to get into the characters, the plots.
Yeah. If there's like an interesting premise and it's intersected with loli and shota, then sure. But if it's just a cute loli and shota anime, then probably not.
Yeah, because I watched an anime, I think it was called Moetan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard of it, yeah?
Nope.
I think it's this magical girl loli show that was aimed exclusively to adults, but it's not hentai. It's more edo than anything else. And I did watch it for a little bit, and yeah, sure, it's a little entertaining, but you can just tell it's kind of fluff. There's not much to it.
It's a slice of life, probably, type of stuff, I would imagine.
I think it was mostly them just kind of poking fun of the whole magical girl genre and then showing loli butt as much as they can.
I think a big reason like you said, stories you have to really get invested into, and I think because, you know, Dr. X and myself, we write a lot, and we like to write interesting characters, and for IA2 and the story and stuff, I think it's probably just hard for us to just be like, oh, I'm gonna watch this anime I'm interested in this just because of this one character. Like I wouldn't be able to do that. The premise has to be interesting. And if it just so happens to have loli or shota characters, then great. That's kind of like why I enjoyed like Spy Family. Well, when it first came out, because I was just like, ooh, it's got kind of like a cute loli character. Oh, it's got multiple loli characters and a shota character, and it seemed interesting. So I like got into that. So like that's like an example.
That wasn't the primary reason. It was kind of just a cherry on top.
Yeah.
So I have to mention that in Spy Family, yeah, you got your cute loli and shotas, but there's also a character called Becky that's really into an adult man character.
The black haired girl with the little bomb on her hair.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't watched it, so I have drawn her before, but I've never watched it.
It might be amusing to you if you ever do watch it. There's an episode where she tries to seduce that adult man. His name is Lloyd. So if you ever do watch it, that episode might be funny to you, since you kind of like that dynamic.
Well, that would explain a lot of these fan arts I've seen.
yes, it would.
yep. Yes. Yeah. That's. I'm guessing that probably when you get commissioned for stuff, you probably get commissioned things that are kind of like the flavor of the month type stuff, whether it's a new anime that came out, or I mean, you might get the occasional person who just really loves a particular character from a video game or an anime that came out years and years ago. But because you don't follow animes and stuff, you might not know, but I would imagine some of the commissions you get probably are from people who are just like, oh man, I just saw the Spy Family Becky and Lloyd episode. I gotta commission something.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I do get commissions, there are occasionally I will get some people asking me to draw the same character, and it's two different people. So it kind of shows me that this character just came out or is the character of the month and they want me to draw him. which I'm fine with. I'm cool. I just don't like drawing the same character over and over and over and over and over again. I can't remember how many times I've drawn Kana from the Dragon Maid thing. Like, she's fine. Yeah. I do like her design and everything, but I've drawn her so many times and from different people as well. But I've also seen a couple of other anime characters here and there. And a couple of commissioners have asked me to draw characters from anime from like the 90s, which is also pretty cool. I get to see characters from all different eras.
In terms of your art that's not commissioned, so it's art you made that wasn't part of a commission, what can you say about the characters in the art? Are there any commonalities? Are they pre-existing characters, or are there your own original characters? Or
you're referring to art that I draw for myself?
For yourself, or not directly part of a commission?
Well, whenever I do draw for myself, I try to experiment, because generally speaking, people don't commission me to draw anything but mostly lolis. Occasionally, some people do ask me to draw other things, but generally it's mostly loli. So I do try to draw other things. I try to draw dudes. I try to draw milfs. I try to draw just anything that just allows me to stretch my muscles, and I do that on stream.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and there was also a couple of streams where I've tried to do portraits of human faces with just shading and shadows, because I'm trying to learn how to think more like a painter and not so much as an illustrator, or find a way to combine the two. I think that would make me a much more well-rounded artist. But I do try to draw different things as much as I can, because I don't get to draw as much as I can for myself. I'm usually pretty busy drawing other people's things, which I'm okay with, because I mean it is how I keep the lights on. But I do want to focus on my things as well.
So how long have you been sharing your artwork on the internet?
Ooh, I think since I started my DeviantArt gallery. I don't use it anymore, but I can't remember exactly when, 2005, 2007, something like that. That's generally where I started to draw online. And I actually started commissioning, or something close to commissioning, on another website called Gaia Online, or Gaia Online? I think Gaia Online. Yeah, it's sort of like a Club Penguin sort of thing. Now, that was pretty big back in the day. But it was more anime. It was more generic anime. And it was just a bunch of people with bare bones avatars. And they were selling these clothes for coins that you would get for either real money or just by giving it to people. And I do remember me just commissioning banners and different types of artwork or sketches and drawings of their avatars for coins, not even real money, just kind of like coin for clothes and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's a pretty clever design though for a website, when you think about when you'd be able to do that. That's pretty clever.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was done a lot more back then. It was a pretty big thing in the 2000s, I think. Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, everybody had a online forum, but not just a forum, but you had to have an avatar and you had to spend money. And it was a pretty big business model back then. I don't think it exists anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't really exist anymore. But I do remember back in the day being on Gaia Online for a little bit.
Ah, you were on Gaia Online.
Yes. I didn't last very long there. I got bored of it, but I think there was like a month of my life where I would go onto the forums and talk to people. I didn't get super into customization stuff, but I did get into the fad/craze for a little bit when I was young.
Yeah, you just post some random crap and just wait and see who responds to your to your message.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know that feel.
Would people ask you to draw something and you would make coins from that?
Yeah, it was very little coin, and I was mostly just trying to get outfits for my avatar. But my art wasn't really all that great, but I took what I can get. And I genuinely cannot remember what my first real world currency mission was. Like, I really don't know. But I don't know how I transitioned from that to DeviantArt. And from DeviantArt, I think I was starting to sell commissions there. That's where I really started to sell my commissions on DeviantArt. But I haven't been on DeviantArt for a very long time. They're not so deviant as you can as one would wish.
Yeah, they kind of went the opposite way over recent years.
Yeah.
The safe art right now, not DeviantArt.
Yeah, it's nothing but safe art.
But that was the place to be. That was the place to be for a ton of artists for quite a while. And then it's kind of like, I think it went, didn't it go basically like DeviantArt was really big. Then I think it probably went over to Tumblr quite a bit. Cause I think Tumblr probably was the next, well, maybe Newgrounds and Tumblr. And actually maybe Newgrounds was before Tumblr.
Well, Newgrounds was more animation, right?
Yeah, it was more animation at the time, but. Right now, though, you definitely see artists posting their still images on Newgrounds.
Yeah, that's right.
Newgrounds definitely had a resurgence in the past few years, which is pretty cool.
Well, that's really cool. I really loved Newgrounds. You get to see violence and titties at the same place. It was pretty cool.
That is very true. Do you remember those games where it would be like some kind of cute character and the whole point of the game would be to like explode them or like shoot them or something like that?
Yeah, that was torture games. I remember those.
Yeah,
I never really liked those per se.
Me neither.
But I mean, I'm happy somebody had a way to express themselves better in a video game than anywhere else.
Yeah, get some of the anger out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like see some of them. I wasn't super into it. I was honestly wondering, like, why do you hate Pikachu that much?
Well, I mean, when you're an edgelord teen, you want to hate everything that everybody loves. I get it.
Yeah, that's how some teenagers have been.
I don't like Fortnite, but I'm not going to shit all over Fortnite.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Kind of makes me laugh thinking about that, because I do remember that stuff, like when Pokemon was being like shit on through different different like animations and like games and stuff.
So how did you go from the DeviantArt to doing NSFW art, or did you do any NSFW art on DeviantArt?
Posted it on DeviantArt. I'm pretty sure I have a couple on there. Nothing like what I do now, but I'm pretty sure there was always a policy on DeviantArt that you can't have like genitalia or anything very explicit on there. So just sexy images here and there. But I've always drawn that stuff. I just haven't uploaded all the time.
And then how did you get onto Brag? Like that was obviously more recent, but like what brought you to Brag?
After DeviantArt got more mainstream and started cracking down on pretty much everything, I actually started on Pixiv. I heard, and I don't remember exactly where, but I heard that there was this Japanese gallery place that was similar to DeviantArt and would allow all sorts of other stuff. And so I checked it out. It was Pixiv. Lo and behold, it was in English, so I can actually understand it. And I just made my account and just started uploading there. I actually started uploading things uncensored at the start. I got my account banned for a couple of days, and I had to pretty much remove everything and then start from scratch. But I didn't lose my account per se. I just had to re-upload a lot of works on my gallery. And that's where I've been my entire time right now. That's my main gallery really is Pixiv. And Brag came around later on. Someone in my stream or on my Discord mentioned Brag, and I checked it out, and it was similar to Tumblr, because I also had a Tumblr that got nuked pretty quickly. And the Brag is pretty similar to Tumblr, so I decided to just post small things there. It's really not a focus, Brag per se, but now every time that I post something on my Pixiv and I have to do it censored, I don't like the idea of selling uncensored works on my fan box. So anytime that I do upload something on my Pixiv, I just upload it directly on my Brag uncensored, so that anyone can just check out both images. And I've had the Brag for, I think, just under 5-6 years, something like that.
Oh, six okay. years.
Yeah, so you must have started when Brag like just launched, because I don't think Brag's been around for more than 5 or 6 years at this point. I think it's...
It says here 2018. when I started.
Yeah, so you probably started like right when it was only around for maybe like a year or so.
Well, I opened the account, but I didn't really upload much to it because I was still focusing on my Pixiv and trying to grow that. But it's only been a few years that I've actually been uploading on both sites at the same time.
Yeah, it looks like Satori, the admin of Bragg, it says he joined April 24th, 2017.
Oh, there you go. Only 1 year late to the party.
Yep.
Oh, there you go. But yeah, I wasn't really focused on it when I first opened my Bragg.
So you do have a fan box?
Yeah. I have a Pixiv fan box. I used to have a fan box that gave a lot of rewards, mostly sketches with colors, that sort of stuff. But it was taking up so much of my time, and I had other commissions and I had my own projects that I want to worry about. And so I had to pretty much get rid of all those personalized rewards from my fan box. And right now I opened up something called the Panty Pass, and you can check it out on my Pixiv and my fan box. And right now I'm just offering mostly a monthly file full of everything that I do completely uncensored and easy to find. This January, I'm going to be uploading a mega pack, which will include pretty much absolutely everything that I have created since I started the fan box. So it's just completely jam packed with all sorts of stuff, and it makes it a lot easier for people to find. That's on the base membership, which is the Innocent White Panty Pass membership. And on top of those, I do offer, it was the ability to vote and to suggest ideas for the monthly community pick. I do a monthly picture with the community. They suggest ideas. This month's community was the dragon pick. I don't know if you guys seen it, but that was suggested by the community. They wanted me to draw a dragon character because it's the year of the dragon. And they also voted on poses, that sort of stuff. And then together we just created the image, but that's on the next tier. And then the tier after that is the VIP pass, which is basically giving you access to VIP streams. These are private streams that I do where I work on projects that aren't ready for public consumption just yet. That's where I'm working on doujins, on visual novels, on lots of other things that I don't show to people just yet. Eventually people will get to enjoy them, but right now this is just a stream for people who really want to see how the sausage is made, per se. And then on top of that is the meme tier, which is just the whale tier. It's just there to see if anybody actually wants to donate the maximum amount you can give on Fanbox. and they also get access to special emotes where I put the whale character on different emotes and different places on my streams. But yeah, that's just the meme tier for anybody interested in supporting. But yeah, that's basically my fame box.
That's cool. That's lots of cool rewards on your fan box. You said it was called the Panty Pass?
Yeah. It's kind of like the Battle Pass, but I made it a Panty Pass because it's cooler that way.
Have you thought about getting a Subscribestar?
I actually do have a Subscribestar. That's plan B. That's the just in case.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't want to have, I don't want to juggle multiple places right now, but I'm always looking for a plan B, plan C, something. As long as I have my talent and I'm constantly improving and trying to do better, then I should be able to produce things and stay afloat.
Yeah, sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And I also have merch because people on my streams were asking me to make merchandise. I actually designed two t-shirts and they are on sale right now. Hopefully they never find out who I am exactly, but the official merch store only has two designs and two t-shirts. And I've sold a couple. It was always really great whenever I see fans wearing my t-shirts out in public and they take pictures of themselves. I mean, that's pretty lit, as the kids would say.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad you're branching out to merch. I do want to see more Shota and Loli characters do that because it kind of adds to the very real reality that you can do this sort of stuff and you don't have to be so reclusive and stuff.
But I would suggest being slightly reclusive, just in case.
Of course, but you don't have to be too reclusive.
Yeah. I mean, you can still do what you like and just keep producing and doing what you like, and there'll be people out there who will support you.
Exactly. And if anyone is listening and they're interested in Born to Die's art, and we'll put in some images of your art in the video so people can get into a sense of what it is.
Oh, yeah.
If you like the look of his art, he makes Lolly art, but also other characters, other kinds of characters like MILFs and some cool men as well.
Cool dude bros.
So you can support him on Fanbox and check out his stuff on Brag, etc. So yeah, be sure to check that out.
I also wanted to mention that I was also part of a group that published the book for Kamiket.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. The publisher is called Riddle. It's R-I-D-D-L. And I am honored to be in this book. There is a lot of really great artists. I don't know if I can mention them, but they are some really good artists that I have seen. And I was given the opportunity to draw the cover for one of the books. And it's also sold on Melon. Is a Melon book? I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, I think that's what the website is called.
Yeah, it's also sold on Melon, but it's Japanese only, of course. But if you want, I can show you very quick.
How did you get contacted for that? Did you just get a message one day, or did you actually want to be part of that book collaboration?
No, I was just sent a message, and they were asking me if I wanted to join. Honestly, at first I didn't, because there was I wasn't getting anything really in return. They just wanted to start off a small book.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I was just asking permission for me to give them a few images for them to print and sell in the book. And they were also collaborating with other artists. And I saw some of the artists that they were collaborating with, and they were really good. So I said, yeah, sure, you can have a couple of my images. And that was the first book. The second book was where I got to draw the cover. And then I also gave them a couple of other images for them to print alongside other artists. We're not getting rich off this stuff, obviously. It costs a lot of money to print and to be in Kamiket and that sort of stuff. But it's always pretty cool to see our art in Japan.
That is super cool.
Let's see, I'm going to post it in the general, if that's okay. You can delete it afterwards.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
The image that's there repeated three times, that's my cover that I did. I went full What a Wow with that one. And I think it came out okay. I had to draw a background. It was very difficult drawing a plane, but I did what I could. I focused on the girl.
It looks good.
Yeah, well, thank you.
It feels like it fits right in with the all the different artists and stuff. It's very cool.
Yeah, I just hope people enjoyed it. And I didn't know they were going to print out posters to advertise the full stall, but I'm happy they chose me, because they could have chosen anyone else and they went with mine. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's in Japan.
Yeah,
at a Kamiket, which is a really, really fucking big convention. So that's pretty special.
Yeah, well, that's really cool. Hopefully more Japanese fans can learn the name Born to Die and all the other artists that are also in the book. Maybe you recognize a couple of them.
Not quite yet, but I do like the art for sure.
Yeah, it's all based on Westerners. Well, not Western. The thing is that Japanese have the idea that anyone that's not from Japan is American.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they called it Western sort of book, but really we're not from the West per se. I'm from the Mexico, and then there's a lot of other artists from different places, but just people who are not Japanese.
So the book was had art from people who were doing, was it generally lolly art?
Yeah. All of it is lolly art. It's nothing but lolly artists.
Okay, so the book is lolly art done by people who are not Japanese. That's cool.
Yeah, that's the concept.
Yeah, you know, seeing this sort of stuff, like, it's so funny that, you know, you get these books that are just purely just cute lolly art being sold at these conventions. But what Dr. X and I have noticed is, you know, you're getting more publishers in the United States, particularly J18, who are now going to, you know, these big conventions in the United States selling similar stuff like that now. Like they're, and like J18, what they do is they actually publish uncensored Japanese doujins that are translated into English, and they sell them at like conventions, and they advertise them on Twitter, and so that's a pretty big deal to see that. So you can kind of see how it's interesting that you got invited to be part of this published book that was at a Japanese convention. Then you've got J18 kind of doing the opposite, where they're taking like Japanese artist works and translating them and selling them uncensored over here in the United States.
I don't know if J18 like sells the NSFW Lolian Shota at the conventions directly, but I do know that you can get them from the websites, and they're localized into English, and they ship from, they're based in the United States and ship from the United States.
That's pretty cool. As long as you stay in your lane and you advertise to the right people, then that's pretty cool.
Of course, like in places like Anime Expo, sometimes they'll just have like little areas where there's a bunch of manga in a box. Pretty often you can find Lolian Shota, NSFW stuff there. It's not like front and center necessarily, but you can find it there, which isn't too surprising because the Japanese population in California.
I'm sure those kind of places, if you frequent those places, I'm sure you know the nooks and crannies to find these sort of things.
Hydro is definitely right that I am seeing some movement and in a good direction with people based in the United States, and honestly in other places of the world as well, where Lolian Shota is becoming more accessible. So that's very cool. Sometimes I'll see Lolian Shota games like localized in English, like on places like Jest USA, for example. They localize some Japanese games as well as Western games, and some of them have Shota content in them or Loli content in them. So that's pretty cool.
I'm pretty sure that there's plenty of demand. You just have to figure out a way to get it to these people.
Yeah, of course.
What's that site? DL site? That's a place where you can get a whole bunch of indie games?
Yeah, some of them are translated into English as well for people who speak English.
Yeah, in when you buy a game, it lets you know if it's in English or just Japanese.
Yeah, and an example would be Flat Cheese, which has Lolian Shota and MILFs. And it has official English translations, so that's pretty cool. You can see that in a general sense that Lolian Shota is becoming more and more popular, and there are efforts being made for it to become more accessible and more sort of widespread for different audiences, and not just like the Japanese populations, but people in other places of the world. It reminds me of this thread on ATF where someone's trying to translate In Sexual Awakening to Brazilian Portuguese.
Well, I've had my mangas translated to Chinese, and strangely enough, someone translated another manga or doujin into Spanish, which is very strange because they already existed a Spanish version, but they did it anyway.
Version 2.
Yeah.
2.0 revision.
but yeah, it's really cool when you see your stuff just get translated, and because more people want to experience them in different languages.
Yes. And I definitely see Latinos seem to be a pretty big part of the Lolian Shota community, it seems like. I definitely noticed that with In Sexual Awakening, we've had a pretty big Latino audience for that.
Well, I mean, more people speak Spanish than Japanese, so it would probably be a good idea to think about translating it into English, to Spanish, maybe not necessarily just Japanese. But yep. If you had two choices for languages to translate, it would be English and Spanish, I would think.
It would be really fun to have Japanese fans as well. The thing with Spanish fans is that all of them also speak English.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's not necessarily as much of a need to translate it into Spanish. That being said, yeah. You know, it could be cool to have a Spanish translation of our games. Of course, I'm pretty sure it's already being translated into Spanish by someone.
I think there already is like an unofficial Spanish version of IA.
We don't actually have to do anything because someone else will do it. So other Spanish-speaking person will do it anyways.
Well, yeah, as long as there's passion on their translation, I'm sure they'll do a great job. And yeah. Also, as long as they don't make money off of it, because that would not be cool.
I think the all the fan projects that people have done for IA is very cool. Like, people will do fan art and mods and stuff like that. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, the whole modding scene is all based on passion, which is why it's very difficult to make any sort of revenue off of that.
You can, but it's usually based off of much bigger games, like the AAA game stuff.
Yeah, I've heard there was some modders out there that will not sell their mods per se, but if you support them, they'll give you the mod in different forms. Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough. It's their work, right? But yeah, it's sort of a gray area on how to monetize your hard work and effort to mod someone else's game.
Yeah, I kind of think about it like in terms of like how big the creator or creation you're modding stuff of is.
Hmm.
If you're making a mod for like a really big game, it's not like you're cutting into the profits of the big game by making your mod or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like AAA games.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, Capcom is right now doing some shady shit with their DRM. I think it's mostly because of mods or costume mods. It's
butthurt over nude mods.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to sell the newest, shittiest version of their costume when a better costume already exists for free.
Yeah. See, Capcom, what we're trying to say, Capcom, is you gotta make nude, you have to make official nude outfits.
That's how you do it. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it would make bank, let's be honest.
Oh yeah.
Yes, it would.
Absolutely. Ever since Tomb Raider, that's when people were looking for nude mod, an official nude mod inside the video game. Yeah.
Yeah, I do wonder about that, because I think some video games are definitely becoming more explicit, and like Baldur's Gate 3, for example. And I feel like this is partly an intentional thing for marketing as well. And I think some developers or publishers are slowly realizing that there's some market value in being more suggestive or having more nudity.
What? Wait, you're telling me that sex sells? Since when?
Well, it seems like they've taken kind of a long time to realize that themselves, but yes.
Well, my problem with that is that, do you really want to keep pushing that sort of sexual games in more Western video games?
I mean, it depends.
Yeah, it depends on the game. It depends on the publisher as well. Yeah. But I mean, I'm much more interested in Asian or Japanese, Korean games being sexualized than Western games. Yeah, but I mean, fighting games have always been a bastion of sexy ladies.
Very true. I know people went crazy over Chun-Li in Fortnite because of her curves.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they're pretty desperate for any ounce of curves over there.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, Epic Games, I think, knows what they're doing with some of their female models in that game, because there was this one, it was one of their characters from the game that they gave her like an Easter Bunny outfit, and they gave her some pretty substantial looking hips from the back. And a lot of people really liked that, too.
Are there any games from Asia, including Japan, that you've been playing recently?
Right now, I've been playing Nioh 2.
Oh, how's that going?
Not well. Like, I like the game, but my God, every single time I make any sort of progress, it just slams me down to the ground. It's basically a Dark Souls game. And
yes.
And I do enjoy it, but it does get a little tiring, just constantly getting smashed down all over and over and over again. But I did download the Thick Girl mod. That was the best way to play that game.
Well, you have something nice to look at as you get your ass beat.
Well, see her ass get beat. Yes.
Yes, right. Very true.
Yeah. But I've been playing Nioh 2, not a very recent game, but I've been playing a lot of that. And I've been playing a whole lot of different games. I also downloaded the newer version of the PlayStation 2 emulator, and I've just been playing all sorts of different PlayStation 2 games from that.
How's the performance?
It's way better than the other emulator they had. They're really changing it to be more like Duck Station, which is such a great emulator for PlayStation 1 games. And it feels like that's what they're going with. They're trying to make it more like Duck Station 2. And so far, the performance has been pretty good. there's a lot of games that wouldn't even launch or just play terribly, and now they actually look and run very, very good.
That's awesome. Like, I've definitely seen some pretty amazing developments in the emulation scene recently.
Yeah, thank God for them, because we need to, more people need to experience these amazing games from the past.
Yeah, I do appreciate like the efforts to like preserve games for future generations.
Well, yeah, all games need to be preserved. Even Sneak King should be preserved. Somebody has to experience that game.
I've never heard of that. What is it?
You never heard of Sneak King?
Oh, jeez.
No. It's a game. It's a sneaking game. It's a stealth game, and it's all about the mascot from Burger King walking around trying to give hamburgers to people.
I think I've heard of this game. Yes. Now that.
Yes, we need to preserve Sneak King. Hashtag Sneak King. Preserve.
I mean, when you think about it, it's always the communities and the like passionate communities are the ones that end up preserving like Sneak King and all these other like otherwise games that would just fall into obscurity forever. That's why it makes me laugh. Those memes of that shows Tom from Tom and Jerry, and it's supposed to be like Nintendo, and then they say, well, we just want to preserve your games from the Nintendo eShop, and it shows Tom getting really mad, and it's supposed to be Nintendo. So it's like, no, you can't preserve our games. Only we can do it, and only when we feel like it.
Well, I mean, there's no benefit to a giant corporation to preserve any of these games. In fact, it actually costs them money to preserve these things. So it doesn't, there's no benefit to them. So they're just not going to do it. And then when we do it, it hurts their bottom line. Cause if you have an emulated version of say Majora's Mask, and then Nintendo puts out a shitty version on their own emulator, like where are you going to play it? Or are you going to spend the extra money to have a quote unquote official version that just runs worse than the emulated version you can have right now?
Yep.
Some people definitely will. But that was a great episode with you, Born to Die. So,
So
we can find you on Pixiv, Fanbox, and Barag, and you also have a site where you can buy official Born to Die merchandise. And I think you also stream on Pomp, is that right?
Yeah, that's mostly where I stream, but I also stream on Pixiv Sketch sometimes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, sometimes I stream in both places at once, just to double the audience. But I'm generally on Pomp.
Do you have a regular schedule for when you stream on Pomp?
Yeah, generally I stream pretty much every day. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays are my public streams. Tuesdays and Thursdays are my private streams, VIP streams. And every Friday is a mini commission stream where I sell two slots and I get a miniature commission I get it done as quickly as possible. And I usually do sell out both lots every single Friday. And then on Sunday, I do Twitch streams, right? Just play video games and hang out for an hour or two.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
So people who are interested in getting commissions for Born to Die, be sure to contact him.
Yes, please.
And buy his merch if you're really interested. Because I thought it was cool that you do have your own merch site. Like that's definitely like, I think it's like another way of generating support for yourself, you know, and for your fans to show, you know, that they're supporting you too.
Hydro, did you see the shirt that Born to Die is selling?
Well, I know there's a Lolly one.
Doesn't that Lolly one remind you of Future Funk? Is it based on that?
Yep, it is.
Oh man, I love Future Funk. That's like one of my The Daft Punk's one of my favorite like artists ever, so Future Funk was kind of the answer for me when they, oh man.
Well, it's based on the song Plastic Love, I believe it's Shitty Pop.
Yep, love that song, yep. Love St. Pepsi, love Macross.
Yeah, you're speaking my language.
I could talk for hours about that stuff.
Yeah, I like that. Vaporware, also really good.
Yes.
Vaporwave's great, yep. I also like Weather Channel Wave too.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. That was pretty good too.
There's a ton of amazing stuff. I actually produce music, or at least I would like to get to the point where I can. And you know, Future Funk's great. I would love to do more music like that. It's just a ton of fun. So yeah, like that. See, that's smart that you created a shirt based on something that is already like established and popular, but it's also related to you. Very, very, very smart way of getting people being like, oh man, I mean, I love Born to Die, but I love Future Funk. I love them both. I'm going to get the shirt. And it's like psychological.
I didn't really think about it like that at all. I just kind of liked the design and I thought it would look cool on a t-shirt.
It just happened to work out. Nice.
The more you talk to me, the more you realize that I really have no business sense whatsoever. I just kind of do what I like. I don't really think about the bottom line all that much.
Hey, that's respectable too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you certainly don't come off like don't come off like that. You've got 13,000 followers on Bragg. You've got an established Pixiv. You got a Subscribestar as a backup. You got a lot of fans that watch your streams. So, you know, ultimately what Dr. X and I always say is, you know, you don't necessarily have to have business sense. It's more like if you are committed to whatever you're creating and you're sticking to your guns, as they say, and you want to create what you want to create, you're just going to attract people to you that like it. And then yeah, it just kind of builds from there. That's just how natural success is built.
Well, yeah, that's how most creators on any platform, YouTube, Pixiv, whatever it is, if you are passionate about something and then you just share with people, eventually you'll find others that are also passionate with you and will support you in any way they can. Sometimes they can't support you with money, which is fine, but they can populate your streams, they can share your art, they can talk about it, and they can just hopefully they have good things to say about you, and your craft can grow alongside them.
Exactly. That was a fantastic episode with you, Born to Die.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love having you. People will be sure to check out Born to Die's sites for some awesome art, including the Loli art.
Yes, lots of Loli art.